So item 50 of the 64, singing, Gita. Srila Prabhupada writes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Hare Krishna mantra and approved song should be sung. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 24.334 purport. The nectar of devotion describes the glories of singing the Lord's praises. A Brahman who is constantly engaged in singing the glories of the Lord is surely elevated to the same planet as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Krishna appreciates this singing even more than the prayers offered by Lord Shiva. Nectar of Devotion, Chapter 9, quoted from Linga Puran. And the next is playing musical instruments, 51. Just as one should learn to cook nicely to please the Lord, one should strive to please Him by gaining at least some basic skill in playing such musical instruments as the mridanga and kartals. In some temples, such as Radharaman in Vrindavan, devotee musicians regularly play classical Indian musical in the evening for the pleasure of the Lord. And dancing, 52, Nartana. Srila Prabhupada writes, in the Dvarka Mahatmya, the importance of dancing before the deity is stated by Lord Krishna as follows. A person who is in a jubilant spirit, who feels profound devotional ecstasy while dancing before me, and who manifests different features of bodily expression, can burn away all the accumulated sinful reactions he has stocked up for many, many thousands of years. Nectar of Devotion, Chapter 9. Then another quote by Narad Muni from the Nectar of Devotion, the same chapter. From the body of any person who claps and dances before the deity, showing manifestations of ecstasy, all the birds of sinful activities fly away upward. Just as by clapping the hands one can cause many birds to fly away, similarly, the birds of all sinful activities, which are sitting on the body, can be made to fly away simply by dancing and clapping before the deity of Krishna. Yeah, Krishna Kshetra points out here is one must always remember in dancing that you're dancing for the Lord, and that one should not be very careful about ignoring the deities or about any kind of wild dancing that may in any way endanger the deities or, you know, the devotees or other kinds of things. Here it's not as difficult because the deities are so high and you'd have to get through, you know, 15 feet of marble to get to them. But in some of the, you know, in the West, it's sometimes just a living room that they've converted one side, and all there is a curtain. So a few wild, spinning, mad brahmacharis could go flying through the altar with great ease, you know. So here, the singing, the dancing, playing musical instruments, then it's a very important combination. It's actually, you know, one of the essential points of the Sankirtan movement. Is this singing, dancing, and playing musical instruments. So then, in this, the most important element out of that is the chanting of the holy name. The holy name must be the prominent element. So that means the playing of the instruments has to be balanced with whatever is the tune, whatever is the mood, and however loud the person's singing. If someone's singing very loudly, you can play more loudly. If they're not singing loudly, you can't play as loud. It has to be balanced. I've seen, I remember we were having some mridanga and some musicians, you know, professional musicians, and they had come many years back. They came for a visit to Mayapur, and they were listening to the bhajans and all that. And then I remember at least two of them on different occasions made the comment that, especially when you're playing the bhajans, but is that the drum player has to learn that when the lead singer is singing, he plays the same beats but very lightly, because he has to balance one voice. And then, when everybody sings, then you play louder, because then you have to balance everybody's voice. So that means that they're that conscious that they can keep going from soft to loud, just in their playing. like that. It's just, they just made that comment. You have to be able to balance. So this fineness is there. It's not a, how you say? It's not a bad thing if one can do these things. You know, if one can refine these things to increase the Lord's pleasure. Of course, if one doesn't have that ability, the essential point is that desire to please the Lord by singing, dancing, and playing these musical instruments. That is there. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur mentioned that to dance, you don't have to worry about the speed of the kirtan. Even if it's going slow, if you want to dance, you can dance. Means there's no restriction on, if you're very happy and jubilant and it's going slow, you know, and you feel like dancing, that's fine. You know, someone shouldn't worry. So those who are singing the kirtan should be trying to please the Lord and make something pleasant that the devotees can sing and dance with nicely. You know, it's not the, how they call here, the full rail gadi kirtans.
Rail
gadi? Rail gadi means, you know, it means a train, a full steam train kirtan, which means you get all the instrument players and the guy with the microphone and all the kartals, and you get them all in as small a place as possible, and they beat on it as loud as possible, and they're totally oblivious to the holy name, the deities, or the devotees. And that's, you know, of course, it's considered very enthusing for those persons between the age of probably, you know, 12 and 25 or like that, because they have the energy to do those things. But generally anyone below that age or older than that age finds that there's some, how you say?
Endangered.
Yeah, endangered of getting hit by a flying brahmachari or losing an eardrum due to the decibel rating going above 120. And, you know what I mean, all these different things. So even so, in Radhadesh, it was interesting. There were some conversations with Prabhupada about the dancing, because in the kind of the mid-70s, this new style of dancing came, you know, that was meant for, you know, fired up, you know, mean brahmacharis between the ages of, you know, 16 and 25, you know, who didn't mind a little excitement and were not, you know, or how do you say, adventurous. They weren't worried about danger, you know, and stuff like that. Is that they started this style of dancing. And so then some of the senior men were mentioning that they're dancing so crazy. Prabhupada said, no, graceful, nice. You see Lord Chaitanya's picture, how he's dancing and like that. They're saying, no, they dance different from how you showed, how Prabhupada had showed. Prabhupada said, no, I should dance simple. But he didn't also want to say they can't dance crazy if it's natural and spontaneous. The point was, is if it's spontaneous, then basically anything goes. But it actually has to be coming from the heart, not the ones just doing it because that's the thing to do, you know? Like it doesn't, like this thing where two people, they hold each other's hands, crossed hands, and then spin. Like that. The natural thing is that you put the feet together and the arms are straight and then you just lean back. So you're like in a V formation and then you spin and in a relaxed way you can go very, very fast. And then you slow down and then, you know, you go back into a proper vertical position. And then it stops. But it's, you know, it's nice, it's fun, it goes fast, it's done when things are going very fast in the kirtan. And they also do it in Goloka. It's one of the dance moves that they use. But it's very graceful. But when you see they get together and they keep their arms bent and as they're spinning around, they're pulling, jerking each other like that and have these weird grins on their face. And then finally one of them sees the opportunity and takes the opportunity to spin the other person, flinging off and smashing into a few other people. And then a bigger smile comes on their face that they have, in this way perform their dancing pastimes very pleasing for the Lord. So these kind of things are not, it may be an ecstasy, but one has to find the source of that ecstasy, if it is coming from chanting the holy name or if it's coming from some other place. So one has to see that. Otherwise, many times, funny dancing goes on, but it's very spontaneous. It just happened that time. So next time, oh, that was very fired up. Well, what was fired up was that the mood of the kirtan, the consciousness of the devotees, the nice cooperation between the singer and the musical instruments and everybody else, and the atmosphere. Maybe it was a special day, or you had someone who was, you know, very powerful leading the kirtan, or though that's what made it nice. And because of that, then you had this very unique dancing. So many times, neophyte devotees will take it that it's that kind of dancing, that's what made the ecstasy in the kirtan. No, the ecstasy in the kirtan coming from nice kirtan created that dancing. So you see many times that they try to copy that dancing or sometimes there is like a very special thing. It was, you know, Prabhupada's, you know, maybe it was Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja or some special thing, or, you know, a nice Guru Puja kirtan. All the devotees have just come from so many different places, and it's one of the first kirtans together, and it's the morning Guru Puja. So they do some very special things, you know, with Prabhupada's names, you know, these ones where they stop everything and go, Jai Prabhupada, and, you know, and they do all kinds of, you know, vocal gymnastics, and, you know, it takes 5 minutes to kind of, like, go through Prabhupada's name a few times, and then it starts off again, and then they're running all over. So that was because of that whole atmosphere. Well, if you do it again the next day, if it doesn't come naturally, it'll be artificial. So Prabhupada's point was, is wild dancing may be there, but it can't be artificial. If you're just doing it because you think, this is a fired up kirtan. If I dance like this, then I'm a Pakka Brahmachari, or I'm a really great kirtan leader, or I'm a great instrument player, or, you know, I'm a, like that, that's artificial. And then you should just stick to very simple, nice things. But if the mood is such, it becomes very enthusiastic, then, you know, special kinds of singing, all kinds of unique things come up. You know, but you have to be, one has to understand, those are coming from the mood. Right? That comes from the mood. And from that mood, then you get the activity. If you think the activity will create that mood, it doesn't necessarily always work that way. You know, unless it is done purely. Like Prabhupada mentioned, if you're not feeling ecstasy in the kirtan, you just dance, ecstasy will come. You know? So by doing that, it creates it. Because you're pleasing Krishna, you're dancing like this. But that purity must be there. But if you just go out and dance and you think, yes, I'm such a great dancer, everyone should see, or I sing the kirtan, everyone should see what a great kirtanier, I'm playing the drum or the kartal, see, everyone should understand what a great I am, then it'll be a disturbance. It won't create the ecstasy. But if in the pure mood you saw someone do like this, you do like this, and it created a nice, fine. But if not, one should be very careful that try to make everything blend, you know, based on chanting, dancing, pleasing Krishna, like that. So, yes?
I would like to ask a question about the etiquette of singing. Lead singing. In the sense that sometimes I hear that one should not, I mean, I'm not taking for, just sometimes we hear one should take, we should not go and sing himself only when he's invited to sing. What would be the right attitude of that?
Oh, whether one invites oneself to sing or one is invited by others? It depends very much on the situation. When you have like a festival and you have so many leading people there who each one in their own right is a very nice kirtanier, then one might be sensitive to see if there's some system going on. You know? Maybe they're being invited, or, you know, or maybe there's, you know, maybe there's a hierarchy, someone more senior, and they may want to lead, so you want to be careful. So there should be some sensitivity there. And if it's a matter of, you see, it's no one's leading, or It's just whoever likes to leads, and one can sing oneself. But if one sees that there is some kind of arrangement going on, then it's better to stick to that arrangement. You know, so that would very much depend upon the situation, you know, the time, place, and circumstance like that. But especially at festivals and big centers, then it's better to kind of like be invited. Smaller centers or, you know, like that or where, then one can see. Does that make any? Yes.
Maharaj, in doing these things for the Lord, for the deity, what's that fine line? Because sometimes it's like you say, also the reciprocation between devotees in singing and dancing.
Yes.
That will also be pleasing to the Lord.
Yes.
But, you know, at what stage do we, you know, like lose the focus on the Lord and we're actually just kind of almost, you know, together having a good time, and sometimes one becomes a little neglectful of the Lord or thinking of the Lord's pleasure. Actually, I'm doing this for Krishna. So could you say something on that? I mean, where's that, that dividing line seems to be sometimes quite blurred.
Mm.
Especially when it's prominent personalities either leading the kirtan or in the kirtan, then one sometimes wonders, now, you know, have we gotten away from the original principle of pleasing the Lord? Or are we all reciprocating in such a nice way that actually this is still pleasing to the Lord, you know, to see his devotee, you know, interacting in this way? So.
Yeah, that's a nice point. The it's still basically, it would still, I would say, it would continue from Kaunteya's question. It depends on the mood that's there. Mm-hmm. Is that one would have to see, because if the devotees are very happy and absorbed in the kirtan, and they're very, you know, absorbed in chanting, and they like the association, and they're very enthused, or it's a special festival day, or, you know, some occasion or situation, then that absorption is not bad. See, attention off the Lord and his name are non-different. So as long as one's absorbed in the name, one is trying to sing nicely, dance nicely, and that, then I don't see that there would be a problem. When the focus goes just on to the dancing and everyone is just, let's say it's just a matter of ego or something, then that's another thing, you know. Or when this basically comes down to the mentality, because in the Gita, it's like Krishna tells Arjuna he's a fool for either professing Kshatriya principles of protection of the family dynasty and all that, or for taking up Brahminical principles and going to the forest. And he says, you're a Kshatriya, you're going to fight anyway. So, you know, he's laughing at him there. And then later on he tells them, yeah, do your duty. You fight. So then one kind of starts to, well, what is the essence then? You know, what is happening? Because here Arjuna is professing prescribed duties, or Krishna is rejecting it. Later on, Krishna himself presents prescribed duties. You know? You know, at the same time as he says, you know, Veda, Vada, Ratas, and those, is that other? Mata, is that it? Is that one? Flowery words of the Vedas, the same verse. You know? Like that. So it becomes very hard. Well, here Krishna is rejecting what Arjuna is saying, and he's rejecting those who are followers of the Vedas, but then his conclusion is follow your prescribed duties. But the difference is do it for him. So these duties, the duties, the ritual, the name, all these things are Krishna. So the important element then is not as much, is that you're doing something that is authorized by the Lord for the Lord. Doing something not authorized for the Lord, you know, then has its maybe its beginnings in devotional service. Like that, that you're starting to recognize Krishna in one's life. Like that. And to perform prescribed duties and not do it for the Lord is more pious, but it's not a whole lot better. It's just the other side of the spectrum. Mm. You know, you either accept the Lord's authority according to culture and activities, or you don't. So if you do, that's pious. You don't, that's impious. But both of them are material. So you have to do something in the material world. So therefore, we'll do the pious activities. But we won't do them for the pious result. So Krishna says, do your duties, but not don't expect the result. Results for Krishna. So if you do something for somebody without expecting return, then that's called affection. That's love. So when you do something for somebody not thinking that, well, I'm doing this for them and therefore I'll get this back, then that's affection. So if you're doing your prescribed duties for Krishna without expecting a result, then that's affection for Krishna. It may be a little formal, it may be maybe a practice, you know, like that. One might say it's even mechanical, but still, it's the mechanics of transcendental affection. So what we're doing, more important is how, what is the mood behind it? What is the reason? What is our motive? What is our mentality? Because Krishna says, without wanting result, without ego. So I'm not thinking I'm a great kirtanier, I'm a great dancer, I'm a great instrumentalist. And one's not expecting result out of it. You know, that everyone will praise me or this or that. There'll be some distinction, adoration, or profit out of that. And one is not thinking one's the doer. One is not thinking, well, yes, I'm singing so greatly, but, you know, I'm humble. You know, I don't expect everyone will recognize me for this. So I don't want them to praise me for it. And I'm not wanting any, how you say? You know, no recognition for it. And it's not false ego, it's just the fact. I am a great singer, you know. It's just, I sing, everyone likes it, and it's melodious, and it, I know what to sing at the right time, at the right place, and everybody appreciates it, and everybody says so. So it's just a fact. But Krishna also says, even that idea should be given up, that we understand Krishna is the ability. So he's the doer. So that today we led a nice kirtan, but it doesn't mean that tomorrow we will. It's up to Krishna. And if tomorrow we do, or if every day we do, that's Krishna's blessing. So Krishna each time is giving the ability. So that's up to Krishna. What he will do through who, that's up to him. So some devotee may always lead nice kirtan. Someone always gives nice class. Someone always does nice samkirtan. Or someone always does nice cooking or nice deity worship or nice management. Whatever Krishna wants to do through who, which devotee, that's up to him. But he, that ability is Krishna. So in doing these activities, that always must be kept in mind. I'm doing it for Krishna, you know, as close as I understand or I've heard to the way Krishna likes it done, you know. Like that, like kartals, we play 1, 2, 3, or there may be some, you know, mild variations on that. But we shouldn't think that just because I play like that, it pleases the Lord. No. That you play that way, that's the foundation for pleasing the Lord, because that's the way Krishna has given the way it should be done. Then, on top of that, I do that for the purpose of pleasing Krishna. That is what actually pleases Krishna. Because if you just do it in his way, but with, for ego, then it won't please Krishna. You may get a pious result. You may end up on, you know, Charanaloka, you know, that's all the best instrumentalists in the universe. It means the Gandharvas sing. They're the best singers. So there must be someone that can accompany them in musical instruments. That's the Charanas. Is that the Charanas? The Vidyadharas. Yeah. And then there's the dancers. So that's the Vidyadharas. So if you think you're the doer and you're really great and you're doing it according to, you know, some tradition, like that, but not really to please Krishna, you forget about that, then you may get a nice pious result from it. You may end up in the heavenly planets, in one of these three planets, and you'll be, yeah, you will be the best. You know? So we have to be very careful of that. Because, you know, it's Krishna will fulfill any desire we have sooner than he will fulfill the desire for pure and loyal devotional service. You know? He'll make us Lord Brahma before he'll give us pure and loyal devotional service. Because being Brahma, Krishna doesn't really have to give himself. Or to make us, Indra or anything, you know? The best singer in the universe or whatever it is, you know? Like that. Krishna can give that, it's nothing. His energies take care of that. But when he gives devotional service, he gives himself. So that means you get the whole cosmic creation. So that needs a little bit of surrender. So that has to be mixed. That's the thing. So one has to be careful. So you generally find those kirtans that were very special that you remember, that was very, very nice, is because that was the atmosphere there. The ego wasn't there. Things were just happening very, very naturally, like that. You know, there was nothing, and the dancing, the kirtan, everything was just going. Everyone forgot about the time. No one cared what time it was. You know, no one cared they were sweating or anything. It just, you know, just everything went. Because it was doing that. One was following the prescribed duty of chanting, dancing before the deities. And one was doing it to please the Lord and in the association of devotees, and you know, all mundane concepts just kind of disappeared. And those things are very memorable. Those moments are very memorable, you know. Any situation like that, a kirtan like that, just time spent with devotees, you know, a feast, a lecture, whatever it may be. When that's happening, then that attracts our attention. We remember that, we value that, or we treasure that. You know. Does that make any sense?
It's even sometimes, Maharaj, you see showmanship, but that is properly and maturely utilized in the service of the Lord. And it's actually very charming. It's very different to somebody simply showing off. Somebody's yes. actually using that element of showmanship to enthuse devotees and even non-devotees in kirtan and devotional service.
Yeah, yeah.
Then it becomes very charming.
Yes.
But actually you can see you need a mature person to do that. Somebody who has the purity, but it works.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Because one has, in other words, so many different things can be engaged in Krishna's service. So, it's because those things they attract the attention. Everyone likes to see something very nice or be led in things. You know, if you're, it's like basically you have three natural positions: junior, equal, or superior. So, generally, in a situation, you have very few on the top, a little bit more in the middle, and a lot on the bottom. So then, those who are below, they don't mind someone leading. You know, so in these kind of things, especially in the arts, where there's some showmanship, then it's very pleasing, because you yourself would feel uncomfortable doing those. But this other person does very naturally, and it's not being done, like you said, it's not showing off. Mm. It's just being done to please the Lord. And it's inspiring. Or if you have many such persons, so each one is a showman, then it's pleasure in like friends. This one did this, and then the other one does this, and so many nice things like that. So it's can be very natural, but one cannot legislate these things. It's just they happen very naturally. So many times, you know, the young fired up, you know, like that, they just take the externals of it and try to apply them. Sometimes it works, sometimes it don't. and then they get bewildered why it didn't work, because they didn't have the mood, they didn't have the maturity, you know, they didn't have the spontaneity that was there. Something on that?
A person like Bhakti Maharaj, my good friend, is like, you know, Maharaj from Canada, Maharaj.
Yeah.
I know, I like how he dances, and when I dance that, I feel good, but there is others who like look up on you like, you know, yes.
Okay. Yeah. It's okay.
So that makes me feel uncomfortable, but at the same time, I can really like meditate on Krishna and dance like that. So should I do that, or I should not do that? Or?
Yeah. In Bombay, I think it was 70, what year was that? May have been 74, may have been that year. I think Krishnadas Babaji came. He was there for some time, some weeks. And so he would sing kirtan, you know, because that's the thing he's about. All he does is do kirtan, chant Hare Krishna, do kirtan, like that, and that was it. And very nice kirtan. So then devotees ask if they should do kirtan in the same way. You know, means in other words, you know, exactly, means how he's doing is just the way we should do it and just imitate that exactly. So Prabhupada said, no, everybody will have their own unique kind of flavor to it. So it's not that you exactly, like once I remember Achyutananda, who was during a Gaur Purnima festival, you know, the parikram, all the devotees together, like there's that famous picture of all the Achyutananda and so many sannyasis in the front going down the Gaur Purnima road, like that. So then, I don't know if it was that year, it may have been that year or a year before or after, I don't remember what year that was. And then Achyutananda was singing, and he was singing basically in his own style, but it was a touch different. Not much, means the untrained ear would not have been able to tell the difference. And then Achyutananda turned to, you know, some of those, you know, God brothers there and said, well, I guess at that time all there was God brothers, but whatever. He turned to some there and then he said, do you know who this is singing? He says, well, it sounds like you. He says, no, this is an imitation of Madhavananda imitating Achyutananda. Because, you know, a few devotees kind of learned that tone of voice and mood. And, you know, if you were not in the room, you would think it's a Achyutananda singing, you know. But many others, then they took the kind of style that worked of his way he would present and used that, but not necessarily the tone of his voice. And that was much more natural for the individual. So one may take the principal elements. You know, like I don't know how he dances. If it's very graceful and nice, you can take that. But he will dance in that way because that's the way his body is. You know.
That's my question.
Yeah. So you take the essential points, but then you adjust that according to your mentality, and you know how it'll be bought. You know. So it has to come. Means he's not necessarily copying somebody. You just have to find what naturally comes and then do that. Yes? No? Is that me? Yes.
Make my question understandable, but
also make it loud.
When we are in front of the deities, we are making kirtan or following the kirtan, dancing, singing, whatever. In what mood should the relationship of the deity should be? What relationship do we have with the deity in that situation? We cannot think ourselves.
Mean one of the 12 rasas? Is that what you're talking about? Or,
no. I mean, what should be our mood in relationship to the Lord? What
relationship means what in distance or?
We're doing it to please the Lord, but there is always a question of in what. Rasa, but on our levels.
No, it said the Lord likes, means we chant the Lord's name. One, is that in this age, then chanting Hare Krishna is the Yuga Dharma. By chanting, you're directly associating with Krishna. So that places Krishna. too, it's natural if someone likes to, when someone chants, you know, someone's, it says someone's name or says some nice thing about them, it makes them happy. Because then you know the person knows you and all these different things. So it establishes a relationship. Understand? Then, because you can only say good qualities if you kind of know the person. You can't say if you don't. So that pleases Krishna from this side. So now to put that all together, then because people like to sing, they like to dance, they like to play instruments, then we do that all for God. We do that all for Krishna. You see that some religious systems, they want to reduce absorption in the senses and things like that. So many times they cut out music, musical instruments, dancing. So from that side, it may make one more sober, more reserved, more austere. But it doesn't address the natural, spontaneous, happy situation of the living entity, who in that happiness likes to chant and dance and, you know, sing and, you know. Like, even if you told one of those religious persons that, you know, now they have, you know, just, you know, got $1 million, or, you know, their wife just gave birth to a nice child, or like that, they may be very happy and, you know, and spin around and, you know, like this kind of thing. So it's natural. But it's just a matter of engaging it in the Lord's service. So this is how one engages these things. So the point is one is trying to please the Lord by one's chanting and dancing. And then according to one's level of realization, then that kind of prayer and that kind of feelings will be there.
So basically when you're in front of Rama Madhava, you should be doing it just like in a puja on behalf of a spiritual master. I mean, to please the Lord.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. On the Lord's order, on the spiritual master's order. But it's something we like to do. It's a nice thing. It's not an austerity. To chant and dance is not an austerity. It's something nice. Yes?
Maharaj, one professor I dealt with in South Africa had an idea that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers were somewhat influenced by the Sufi movement, also known as the Whirling Dervishes, and that's why we had this, all this ecstatic dancing and items like that. So, but we know the Supreme Lord, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's avatari, is the source of all these things. So, is that idea because of the different upper sampradayas, or some idea of some Sufi influence, or the mystical Islamic thing?
Well, if we look back, because like these words here, this Gita, Vadya, Nartana, the Pancharatra goes back, you know, even if we want to take the modern historical thing, they go back thousands of years. So, but I think Islam only goes back not so long. So they were there before that. So the chanting, the dancing before the deity, that was always there. But now, in your establishing your process, there's main principles that are there that cannot be ignored. But then your details of application, where you put your most emphasis, that will be different. So in this age, because the chanting of the holy name is the important aspect, therefore the, you know, doing kirtan or doing japa, these are the main ways of performing the kirtan. I mean, performing the chanting of the holy name. So it was always there. It's mentioned in the scriptures and these kind of things. So it's always done. We even see that Narad Muni in his previous, two previous births back, means as a Gandharva, then the demigods were performing Sankirtan. They were performing Sankirtan. and they just thought it was a little bit wild that, you know, here this dude is rolled out with, you know, 50 girls, and, you know, they're having a great time. So the demigods figure that this guy's more interested in the girls than he is in the kirtan. So then they cursed him, and then he took his next birth as the maidservant's son. So that yeah. Does that make sense? Because the so it's always been there.
There's a Vedic precedent.
Yeah, it's a very precedent. Basically, like the Dadavesh. I mean, the in India they'll call Dadavesh, in the West will be Dervish. That is, then it's basically considered that it's taken those elements of what do you call it, Islam, but it's been mixed with the also with the path of devotion. Therefore, it'll be classified as an apasampradaya. That it has some of the elements of the you know, devotion to the Lord, but it's mixed with non-Vedic, how you say, prescribed duties or prescribed or rituals like that. So it, you know. But they were known here in India. You know, I think now it's only like you generally hear about it, in Turkey or someplace over that side. But that's how Sanatan Goswami got out of jail. He said he told the guard keeper that, you know, that he was thinking to become a Dadavesh and he wanted to go visit Mecca, and so he should let him out. And, you know, the guy wasn't, you know, he was Muslim, but he wasn't overly impressed that he, you know, wanted to be a Dadavesh and go visit Mecca. You know, it's very nice, but you're in jail, you know. So even if a Muslim does something wrong, he'll be in jail. So it doesn't matter if he wants to go to Mecca or not, he stays in jail. You know, but then when he added in the, you know, the slight, what do you call it, the slight impetus or inspirational point of 10,000 solid gold coins, then the jail keeper somehow or another took his inspiration more seriously. This man really is serious that he wants to go to Mecca. So I shouldn't stand in his way of his natural blooming devotion. So then he let him out. But he used that term, they'll become a dart, go and join the Dadavesh, which would mean the dervishes. Yes. Okay. Anything else on this? No. Okay. 53. Circumambulation of the deity, Pradakshina. Srila Prabhupada writes, a person who is circumambulating the deity of Vishnu can counteract the circumambulation of repeated birth and death in this material world. Nectar of Devotion, Chapter 9, quoted from the Hari Bhakti, Shuddha Doi. Lankrishna Kshetra Prabhu writes here, walking clockwise around someone and thus keeping one's right side towards him is a way of showing respect. By circumambulating the Lord in this way, we worship him with our whole body. One should not circumambulate someone else in front of the deity. Nor should one circumambulate the deity only once. Oh, I see. As part of the puja, one should circumambulate the Lord at least three times. In other words, there's circumambulation where you are doing it out of respect. You're conscious of the deity and you're going around. So that is a service. It's one of the 64 items. This is number 53. So that is one thing. It's another thing if you're just walking around chanting your japa, and you know, you could be there, you could be out on the lawn, or you could be in a gas station, you could be anywhere. It doesn't matter. You know, you're not really thinking about the deity as such that you are keeping him in the middle and going around. That's not technically circumambulation, because the mood must be there also. But still, because something is there, then, you know, then it's, you know, recommended that one doesn't go around when the deities are resting, or the curtains are closed, they're eating or bathing or something like that. Because then if you are doing it out of respect, in other words, you're performing circumambulation of the deity. You offer your obeisances to the deity's right side and then go around them like this with that idea of performing this 53rd item of devotional service. It's recommended not to do it when it's the doors are closed, the curtains are closed, because the Lord wants to reciprocate. He says, as you surrender, I reciprocate. He wants to reciprocate. He can't do that. Besides, then you're doing that service, and he's already accepting another service. Someone is coming to him and offering bhoga. But now, instead of concentrating on that, then there's someone going around outside, so he must put his attention there. Or, you know, he's being bathed, or he's sleeping. And then we're doing that service. So then he can't reciprocate properly. So the whole idea is Krishna is looking for opportunities to reciprocate with the devotees. So this principle of how we can reciprocate with the Lord is we don't have that pure devotion, but this is one of the ways that we can relate to. We can take the body, go, offer obeisances, and walk around three times. And then this gives an opportunity for Krishna to reciprocate. Right? So therefore, Krishna wants to reciprocate, and he can't because, you know, he's busy doing something else. Right? You know, it's just like, let's say there's a man at the office, he's very busy, and he's got so many things to do, and, you know, and a personal friend comes. You can't really deal with him, he's uncomfortable, you know, so because he's already busy. So it's, if he comes at a time when he's not doing something else, then he can give so much time. So like that, the idea is, of course, we can think about it, well, he's God, he's omnipotent, omnipresent, and that, well, then he can just lay in bed all day, and worship from your heart, and all this kind of thing. But the idea is because we're conditioned, if we don't engage the body, the mind, and the words in Krishna's service, we're going to engage it in Maya's service. So this gives us an opportunity, one of the ways we can engage our whole body in Krishna's service. Like that. So it's nice. So it's generally done when the doors are open. Also, right side is kept. You don't do backwards. Just like in Vrindavan, they'll say if you walk around Govardhan with your right side towards Govardhan, then you go back to Godhead. If you walk around Govardhan with your left side towards Govardhan, then you appear in the spiritual realm. Definitely. But you generally have one of these long furry tails, and you like to hang in trees and eat bananas like that, you know, so they don't recommend like that, or something else, one of the donkeys, or you'd be born in Vrindavan, but you know, because they don't care which way they walk around the hill. So the point is one shows that side, because it's proper. The respectful way is somebody passes you on, like you're walking on a road, you stay to the left so that people pass you on your right, because the right side is considered the proper, the auspicious, like that. So that is interesting. You know? So you pass in that way.
I heard that when you walk next to a senior person, you should walk on his left. When somebody's, you know, somebody's your junior, then you can keep him on the left. Is this some new ageist kind of thing, or this is actually?
I've never heard of it, because we see where someone is situated. Means is we see that the spiritual master in the dhyanam, Navadvip dhyanam, is sitting to the right of the Panchatattva. And in Bombay, I think it was mentioned that the Vyasa-san is always on the right, just like you see in Vrindavan. You know, so it'll either be opposite the deities, or on the deity's right, not on the deity's left, the deity's right. You know, that's also why we keep our parampara pictures in that way. Because that right side thing like that. So it's interesting, though others keep it the other way. Yeah. In a sense of that, I've never heard that there's a specific thing like that. Yes.
You also perform the arati from the right.
Yeah, you perform the arati from the right. You start circumambulation from the deity's right-hand side. And instead of right and directly in front of the deity, you start a little bit to the right, where you can still see the Lord, but from that side you offer your obeisances and all that, and then start around. Yes.
What you're saying about chanting japa and circumambulating. If you consciously think I'd circumambulate whilst you're chanting a japa, is that okay?
That's fine. The point is there's not a problem in that. It's only when the deities are closed. At that time, generally one does not offer this 53rd item. You know? It's just like when the curtains open, you know, then you start kirtan and this and that. Or when the curtains close, you offer the boga. You know, these kind of things, there's a situation to do it. So when the curtains are open, that's when you circumambulate. You know, the curtains aren't open, then generally you don't. That's not the time to do it. What I'm saying is devotees may be chanting japa in the morning before the deities open, they may be walking around to keep themselves awake. But they should not think that I am performing the 53rd item of worship, because it's not being properly done. You understand?
And what about a devotee walking around to keep himself awake whilst the curtain's open, but not consciously thinking they're circumambulating?
That's, you know, that doesn't matter so much. You know? Because they're chanting.
Maharaj, is that like a jata sukriti? You'll be making advancement.
Yeah.
Unknowingly.
Yeah, yeah. Like that. If they aren't conscious and the deities are open, you make advancement. It's like that. Forget that's where the story is. Let me know that there was some sage or something, and he was meditating in the forest, and then I think a hunter shot an arrow at a bird or something like that, and it hit the bird and the bird fell down, and then it was flapping, and there was a little, like kind of little, kind of like clump of grass or something like that, and or a little pile of dirt or something, and it was flapping around, you know, and it flapped around three times like that and then died, and then immediately got a forearm form and went back to Vaikuntha. And the sage is thinking, how does this work? I'm sitting here meditating under this tree for, you know, so many years, and this bird just kind of like flaps around and then dies and goes back to Godhead. You know, what's going on here? So I don't remember exactly how he got the answer, but it was what had happened is in that grass of that, there was a Shaligram Shila. Mm-hmm. So the bird had done circumambulation, had done parikrama, the deity, three times. So that service then went back to Godhead. So it's even unknowing, you know. Or that I think that there was that story of the rat. The rat came to eat the wick. And when you have these oil lamps, when a wick sits for a long time, it gets a lot of heavy carbon on the front. And then sometimes it doesn't burn well. So you have to knock the carbon off, you know, or it starts burning farther back, and the carbon doesn't even really burn there anymore. It burns from farther back. Then you need to move the wick up. So the rat came to bite the wick, and when it bit the wick, it moved it forward. So then the lamp that was just about to go out started to burn more. And when it burnt more, then it caught his whiskers on fire, and I think he died. But then, you know, the rat went back to Godhead. You know, because he had done some service. He had fixed the Lord's lamp. Like that. So unknown Agyata Sukritis are good. So also when you're dancing from the deity and going in circles, that's not circumambulation. That's just going in circles. Circumambulation is the service of offering obeisances to the deity with the purpose that now you're going to go out of respect, go around three times or more. It's also, I think, nectar devotion that during Chaturmas you do more. So then you may do four times. Or eight times, or you know, whatever it is. So during the Chaturmas season, instead of just doing the normal of three, one goes more. And I think also Jayapataka Maharaj mentioned that the fourth time is considered going around the whole universe, like that. It's like three times is you're going around Bhur Bhuva Swa, you know, and then the fourth time is, you know, greater than that. Well, he says that you get the benefit of having gone to all the holy pilgrimage places in the whole universe by circumambulating the deity. Because all holy places are in the Lord. All the dhams, all the tirthas, like that, all the kshetras. So if you go around him, you get the benefit of having done that for the whole universe. So this is a great way to travel.
The fourth one.
You don't have the money. You don't have the time. You want to go to all the holy places, do a little traveling, see the three worlds, the upper, the middle, the lower planetary systems. You just have to go around the deity three, four times.
The fourth time is just in Chaturmasi for that going around the universe, or is it just...
He mentioned it just as a regular thing. I think Nectar Devotion mentions it just as something specifically for Chaturmas. During that time to do some more service, you know, or for us especially Kartik, you know, of the Chaturmas, and we take Kartik as, you know, very important for doing extra service, you know. Chanting extra rounds or doing, you know, some extra thing that we want to do, some devotional activity that may not have so much time for that time we just concentrate on that. And
it mentions one should not bow down before somebody else in front of the deities.
Yes.
Or do it for somebody else. Simultaneously, we can stop the arti and to welcome our spiritual master. Or any other senior pure devotee, so it seems a little bit contradictory.
No, it's not contradictory. It means we do not bow down before anybody else. See, coming from the Western culture, generally in India, this question is, I mean, only now I've started to hear it. But otherwise, for those who have kind of like grown up in the Indian culture, in India, amazingly, they never ask this question or have a problem with this question. But for those who've grown up in the Western culture, this becomes a very prominent question. Like every time I go to the West, practically every temple, they always ask this question. It's a very popular question. Because we generally see in the Western culture, one doesn't respect anybody, you know, except for number one. Right? The only one that's respected is number one. Like that, everything is done for number one's pleasure and satisfaction. Hmm? You know, number one means yourself. Yeah. So, like that is. But in the Vedic culture, you're respecting your parents, you're respecting your teachers, you're respecting the king, you're respecting the Brahmin, you're respecting so many people. Like that. So in other words, material relationships, someone who's powerful, you want to get their blessings, and, you know, some big political person or some big aristocratic person, and you go up to them and very respectful, you know, like that. You won't do that. Like they say you have a small businessman, he's in the temple, and then in walks the biggest, fattest businessman. Now, if he's anywhere else, the natural thing, well, he will go over and go, Setji, and he'll, you know, touch his foot, you know, because he can only bend a little bit also, because he's also fat, but not as fat as the other guy, right? Because that's a normal thing that would be expected to go on. But in the temple, he won't do that. Because the Lord, he is the ultimate saint. He owns all the wealth, right? And the most amazing thing is he has all the wealth and he's not fat. This is even more amazing, you know? So like that, those things are avoided. But the point is can we approach the deity directly? No, so how do we approach the deity? Yeah, so that means seeing the spiritual master means seeing the deity. So there's no problem in offering obeisances or respects to the spiritual master in front of the deities. Because that is the where our the parampara, our connection to the deities start. It means the spiritual master is the end closest to us, and that goes through the parampara to the deities at the other side. So the whole point is there's our spiritual master, there's all the acharyas in between, and then there's the deity. So we have the tendency to just go in there and think it's just the Lord and me. But that's not, it's not a very refined devotional platform. We understand that the deity then will ask, well, who are you? You know? And then, you know, then you may say who you are, and then, you know, so what has that got to do with him? You know what I'm saying? So we are the servant of the spiritual master, serving the previous acharyas. That is who we are. Huh? Right? Dasanu dasan das. Go, naham vipro nacha narapatir napi vaishana shudro, naham varni nacha narapatir no vanashto yatir va. Kintu prodyan nikila paramananda punamritas. Punamritabder. Gopi bartu padakamalayor. Dasa dasanu dasa. So that is our identity. That's the real identity. Anything else other than this is illusion. Any other identity other than this will then keep you from going back to Godhead. Right? Unless it's an identity in connection with this. I am servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord of the Gopis. Right? I'm not a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. I am the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord of the Gopis. Right? So when you come with that, then God recognizes you. Otherwise, you're just another wayward soul that has, you know, come along. But the only reason we're here is by the blessings of the spiritual master. So therefore it's not a problem. But it has to be also just the mentality balanced, that you see that the time is right, the everything is right, and that it's the right situation. You know? Like the spiritual master may be standing in front of the deity who's offering his respects or absorbed in the kirtan, and then if we come up and go, ah, here is my spiritual master, and offer our obeisances and roll on the ground and do all kinds of things there, stand in front of him offering prayers, it's kind of like we're disturbing his service. Now, if we're his servant, then we should just follow what he's doing. So rather than get in the way and try to make ourselves the prominent feature in the temple, then we take that mood and follow that service attitude of the spiritual master. So he's chanting and dancing, we chant and dance. Right? Otherwise, I think there's that story in Vrindavan. Prabhupada came out for the morning walk, they're just building the temple. So many things are happening. I don't know if they were getting ready for something or a festival, or it was just the construction was going on. And as Prabhupada was coming out of his quarters, out of the temple, then there's this one famous devotee, Vishal, who was there. He was always offer prayers to Prabhupada. No matter where he was, if Prabhupada was there, he would go, and whenever Prabhupada would go out for a walk, he'd be offering prayers. like that. Very unique personality. So this time, this particular place, and he had also a unique thing that he liked to do, you know, which is a tradition. You see it generally more in south. You don't see it so much in north. When Prabhupada would be walking, then Vishal would be in front of Prabhupada, facing Prabhupada, walking backwards with his hands folded and saying all kinds of prayers and this. So the first day, you know, Prabhupada graciously accepted, and then I think the next day or the third day, then it's kind of like, you got nothing to do, you know? And then I think he turned to the temple president and says, you know, there's all these places where the water collects outside the temple. Maybe he can clean these up if he has nothing better to do, like that. So it should also fit in. It's not that just because we want to offer that someone has to take. Just like someone's just eaten a full meal and then we decide, oh, I want to offer something also. Then we can bring along this big, huge feast, but we can't expect the person's going to eat it. You know? So we have to see what is actually useful service in that. So in offering obeisances, we should see that it doesn't disturb the atmosphere, it doesn't, you know, all that. If it fits there, fine. If it doesn't, you can also see, does the spiritual master accept that in the temple? Maybe he doesn't really want, you know? It's a general thing. Maybe there's a formal worship, formal reception. That, what can you do? You're stuck. But other than that, then he can also just say, no, don't in the temple room. But it's philosophically correct and supported by the scriptures. So that no one should worry about. Like that. Right? Means as far as, in other words, no one's going to hell from offering obeisances to the spiritual master, senior devotees in the temple room. That you can put that to rest and peacefully sleep tonight, knowing that all over the world where sometimes these things happen, because generally you don't see it happen much in India, but whatever it is, you know, in the West where this is rampant, then one can sleep peacefully knowing that no one's going to hell. All right. So on this, yes.
Is it alright when spiritual master and he does his neutral? When spiritual master is offering obeisances, that we also in the same time also we bow down and offer obeisances.
This is the second most asked question. That when the spiritual master comes in the temple and offers obeisances, do we also offer obeisances? There's no harm, because we are the servant of the spiritual master. So when the spiritual master is prostrating himself again before the deities, identifying himself as the servant of his spiritual master. That's why we chant the spiritual master's pranam mantra when we offer obeisances to the deities and not the deity's pranam mantra. If one ever wondered that one. Because that is how we are connected with the deity, as the servant of, because the deity, like, who are you? Like in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's songs, then I think, was it Radharani? Krishna or Radharani asks Rupa Goswami, oh, how you have come in contact with this nice servant of yours. And then then Rupa Goswami says, oh, Manjulali has given me this servant. Right? So the deities want to know, what is the connection? They know Rupa Goswami. They know who is Rupa Goswami's direct servants. But now here's a new servant. Who is this? You know? Like that. So there's no Manjulali, who is a servant of Rupa. He is given. You understand? Like that. Or when, what's his name? Like the points across. But this kind of pastime happens in other places also. Like that. Is that this principle of the Lord, we're connection to the Lord. Because if we're directly connected to the Lord, we can only give a very small amount of pleasure to the Lord. But if we are the servant of those who are directly connected to the Lord, then we can actually give more You understand? Means, it's like this. If I directly come before the Lord, how much is my devotion only? Only that much Krishna can reciprocate with. Right? That's all Krishna can enjoy is my amount of devotion, bus. Right? But now if we approach the Lord through His servants, then right there that means when we do a servant, we offer that to our spiritual master. That will go to His spiritual master, His spiritual master, in this way all the way up to Krishna. So how many people are in between? So you add up all that devotion. That's how much Krishna will taste by your service. So that's your choice. Direct and offer Krishna a small amount, or through the devotees, and all that in between is offered. You take your choice. The Western mentality is the closer I am to the front, the better. But Krishna's, what pleases Krishna is who feels himself servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. Because that means whoever is on the end, they actually give the most pleasure. And then their servant gives even more pleasure. Right? So you have Srila Prabhupada is giving so much pleasure through the parampara. So then his servant is giving so much pleasure. Their servant is also giving so much pleasure. Like that. So we have to be very careful when we look at this, that we're not looking at it from the angle of, well, he's just another guy like I was. You know, he was out there on the streets of, you know, Amsterdam, you know, buying and selling all kinds of things and that, and now he's shaved up and been chanting for the last 25 years, and now suddenly we got to offer our obeisances to him in front of the deities. Because that's how we may look at it from our conditioned materialistic platform. But the point is what pleases Krishna is conforming with how Krishna, what pleases Krishna, which is how he looks at it. So he sees the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. So he sees the farther down it goes, the more and more things come. Like that. Then the moon becomes humble and all these things. So our thing, how can we become the servant rather than worry about why other people are respecting and all this thing? Worry about how we're going to develop that same mood of faith and respect. Then that will help our devotional service. Right? Because we all have to understand. Means we're all originally from the spiritual world and we all have spiritual forms. We're just temporarily covered by this insane conditioning here of the three modes because we chose to turn away from Krishna. One should understand that each living entity has an eternal, original, spiritual position as an eternal associate of the Lord. Some don't recognize it. Some are in various degrees of recognizing it. Some have recognized it. But the difference between just the beginning and the end, just like you have in a family, right? Let's say we have a cultured family, right? Maybe a rarity these days, but we might as well, you know, Prabhupada says, shoot the rhinoceros, so we might as well use a ideal example. You have a very distinguished family, you know, aristocratic or royal family, right? Or even let's take a royal family, right? When they have a small child, or like they have a son, now do they just sit around and, oh yeah, that little monster, you know, screams and wets his pants and all these things and makes a big problem and all that? Or the whole family feels, yes, here's another very important valuable member of our family, right? The future king. Yeah, he can't do anything now. He can only cry and, you know, drink milk and wet his pants. That's his occupational duties. Right? You understand? But do they consider that, yeah, it's just a little... Right? No. So the whole point is, and who is... Now, you take other little kids in that family. Now, do they consider that he's just a yelling, screaming little brat? And they may not have so much, you know, of that same vision. So now, which vision is the recommended one to attempt for? That of the siblings or that of the mature adults?
Mature adults.
Yes. So the mature adults see this as, it's just a matter of time, right? A few years. So for those who come from the spiritual realm, those who are taking up the process, they are accepted by them as very fortunate. And it's just a very short time before they'll be again reinstated in their eternal service to Krishna. Not long. Some years, some lifetime, nothing. Right? Figure how many human lifetimes, you take 100 years, how many times will it go into 151 trillion years? Okay, we cut out the nighttime. Right? We cut out the nighttime. So, 150, you know, 75 trillion years. How many 100 years will be in that? 75. So that means what? 750 billion human lifetimes. Right? Quite a few, no? So, there's a very good chance that we've been here at least that long in this one universe, this one half a life of Brahma. Right? 151 is how long, how much time has gone by in this universe since it's the creation. Right? So at least that long we can accept. No? But generally, the term uses since time immemorial. No one can tell. That means maybe we've gone back a few more lifetimes of Brahma? Even just saying they're all human. Right? You're talking about 150. Yeah. Talking about 15 trillion lifetimes. Long time. No? So the residents of the spiritual world don't see 15, 20 years, 30 years, 50 years, one lifetime, or a few lifetimes as very long at all in comparison. Right? So that is the point. That is why the mature devotees, the advanced devotees, everyone likes them because they like everybody else. They see everyone in relationship to Krishna. They're very broad-minded. They're not liberal, they're broad-minded. I mean, we may use liberal, meaning that something that's never been done or not so much done, such as giving mercy to unqualified people. But the general term is broad-minded, mahatma, right? Broad-minded. So he's able to accommodate a lot of different mentalities and all that. Right? So that is the position. So we can either take the mahatma mentality and see the good, or we can take the duratma and see the bad. Right? Duryodhana could not see any good qualities in the Pandavas or in Krishna. Right? And the king of them was Shishupal. Right? Shishupal could engage himself happily for hours just saying bad things about Krishna since he was a small child. I mean, since he could talk, he was speaking bad about Krishna. Isn't it? Since he was a small child, since he could walk and talk, he was blaspheming Krishna. Like that. So that's no big deal that you can find fault in others. Right? You're authorized to find fault when you can give shelter. Right? The parent can find fault in the children because they give shelter. The teacher and the student, they give shelter. The king and the subject, because they give shelter. Like that. Okay, so we'll stop here. It's getting late. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.